Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
To President Trump's approaching decision on whether to keep the U.S. inside the Paris climate deal, he'll announce that at 2 p.m. Central from the Rose Garden, and we'll take that announcement live. The president, as you know, has expressed skepticism about the climate treaty. China and the EU have already said they'll maintain their commitments no matter what the United States does. We're turning now to Richard Alley. He's a geologist and climate expert at Penn State University, and he joins us today from University Park in Pennsylvania. And Richard, welcome back. It's good to have you on the show.
It's my pleasure, Carrie, and greetings to the listeners in Minnesota.
And if you have questions for Richard about the Paris Climate Treaty or climate policy at large, feel free to call or tweet in. Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. And I'm on Twitter, and I've tweeted out a question on this. It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I. NPR. Richard, I think it would be beneficial if you'll remind us in general what the U.S. said it would do when it signed on to the Paris Climate Treaty.
Right. So the treaty is ultimately trying to bend the curve on CO2 emissions, to lower emissions across the world, and to bring us towards a sustainable energy system, a sustainable future. The full scholarship, right? The biggest picture is that if a lot of people in the world adopt efficient policies that use our knowledge on energy and climate, it improves the economy. It improves employment. It improves national security, as well as cleaning up the environment. And so this is an attempt to try to move the world towards widespread adoption of efficient policies that will help people economically as well as environmentally.
One note here, we should say all but two countries signed on to the Paris Climate Treaty. I mean, it really is a global deal, and that is important.
That is important. The scholarship says that if a big player, China or the United States, were to act unilaterally, they can help themselves by dealing with climate, but that the help is much bigger if everybody is on board. So no one country can do it by themselves, but the world would have real troubles doing it without the big countries.
Call here, Richard, for you from Cole in Decorah, Iowa. Hi, Cole.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well. What are you thinking about? What's your question?
So I am a little uneducated on this. I was just wondering, what would the possible positive outcomes of the United States be if they did end up leaving the Paris climate change?
So like upside for the United States, potentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, Richard, what would you say?
Right. So the argument that you will hear is usually that there would be no benefit of us dealing with the climate. And I can speak to that. There are benefits of us dealing with the climate with very high confidence. But if there were no benefits of us dealing with the climate, then you can help some industries, some workers, by not dealing with climate change and the energy impacts, but at the expense of other industries and other workers. So I think the broadest sort of picture is moving towards a sustainable energy system. If you ignore climate change, you ignore the benefits of avoiding the climate, is sort of a wash for the economy. It moves us into new industries. It moves us away from old industries, and it's sort of a wash. If you include the benefits of avoiding climate change, then it's a net benefit for the economy.
So as you know, Richard, President Trump has said that he's concerned that requirements for U.S. companies to meet these overall greenhouse gas emission standards could hobble economic growth. I know this is something that's been debated for a long time. Is there hard evidence? Is there scholarly research that we can point to say, yes, companies have to take a hit when they are trying to meet these more ambitious standards?
I think that you look through the economics of the scholarly research on it, what you find is that when you change anything, there's winners and losers. When we finally decided to build railroads instead of canals, the railroads won and the canals didn't. And when we built interstates, the interstates and the car manufacturers gained at the expense of the railroads. If we move towards a sustainable energy system, the non-sustainable parts, like digging up coal and burning it, are going to be losers.
Okay.
And the sustainable parts, things such as solar cells on your roof or wind turbines overcropping your ranch, are going to be winners. And I think the broadest picture is, if you ignored climate, if you believed that climate change was a hoax, broadly, it doesn't help or hurt the economy much if we work on that transition, but it causes changes. If you include the benefits of avoiding climate change, then the economy ends up better off.
I wondered if we could look to a state like California, which has more ambitious climate or greenhouse gas emission standards than most other states in the country, and yet they have a very strong economy, one of the largest, actually, in the world. Can you use California as a small example of how an economy can thrive even with very tough emission standards, or not?
I think you can. There's some scholarship out of Germany a few years ago that looked at, if we make decisions to move towards a sustainable energy system, what does it do to jobs? What does it do to the economy? And one of the things they found was that there was an opportunity for benefits to the early adopters, because they capture the markets. They're the ones that will build the new companies. And so the sort of, if you get a, you don't want to be on the bleeding edge, but if you get on the leading edge, you actually can win, and potentially you can win big time.
Call for you, Richard, here from Matt in Minneapolis. Hi, Matt. What's your question?
Hi. Yeah, I just thought that we hear a lot about the different technologies and the different reasons to pull out, the reasons to stay into the Paris Accord. And I think that people never talk about, you know, if we went to all coal, how much is my electric bill going to be? If we didn't go to all coal and we went, you know, all solar, all renewables, you know, what's my electric bill going to be? You know, just speaking of it more from like the end homeowner's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like,
Richard,
does it make a huge difference?
Yeah, Richard, we wouldn't go all coal because we're moving away from that. But yeah. I hear what Matt's asking here.
Right. So it's a very good question, Matt, and thanks. So coal has been losing primarily to natural gas, and there really are studies of this, that we have not taken strong environmental climate change actions against coal yet, but coal is losing anyway. If we do anything fast, real fast, you know, so if tomorrow we said you have to make it all sun, we couldn't build it that fast. If we do it efficiently, you know, so there are policies which are wise that take advantage of what we know and what we can do and bring it in over 30 years or so. The usual estimate is it doesn't do much to your electric bill, that maybe up a little, maybe down a little. Conservation will be part of it. You will be using less energy in the future because you'll do better. We've been doing fantastically in conservation already in terms of making gains that more than pay for themselves. And the learning curve has been so incredible. 10 years ago, solar was not competitive with much of anything except for satellites and solar-powered calculators. And now every utility in America is thinking about how they interact with solar, because the price has come down in that decade so strongly that it's really part of the picture. And you've probably seen there apparently are times and places in America that the price of electricity goes negative. There's so much electricity on the grid that they will pay you to take it. And as people learn how to use that, you'll see these great gains. So the best estimate is, if we do this together, we use our knowledge and we work together and we do it over 30 years, that it may even lower your electric bill.
I want to make sure I understand what you just said, Richard. You said there's so much electricity on the grid that people will pay you to take it. What do you mean by that?
My understanding is that at certain times, the wind is really blowing in Iowa, and there's a coal plant running and a nuclear plant running, and so there's a lot of electricity, and either you have to turn something off or you have to go put the electricity into batteries or somewhere, and that we just haven't quite learned to use this this short-lived, wonderful excess of energy is available there. And as people build, you know, so you can make ice at night with that, and then you can run cold air over it during the day to air condition your building, or you can store it in hot rocks or hot fluid and heat your building in the winter. But we haven't built those yet. And as we get more energy, all of the brilliance of your inventors and your business persons and your students is going to figure out how to use that.
Richard Alley's with us. If you've just tuned in, he's a climate scientist and a geologist at Penn State. And we're talking to him, of course, ahead of President Trump's announcement at 2 p.m. Central Time from the Rose Garden on whether the United States is going to stay in or pull out of the Paris climate deal. We'll bring you the president's announcement live as it happens. Richard, a lot of American companies, you know, particularly the ones that are multinational or who are sourcing material from overseas, have already baked in climate change and climate policy into their projections, right, and their corporate economies. How much does it really matter then if market forces are requiring that that business does this, if cities and states have their own climate policies as they do? How much does it really matter in the end if the United States stays in with Paris?
Yeah, I'd love to know the answer to that. It's clear that this issue is so big that even an action by arguably the most powerful person in the world is not by itself going to control the whole discussion. No one can do anything by themselves that it will control things at this point. But if you were to ask, what is the single biggest thing that one person could do to affect the future, this would be a candidate.
What do you mean this would be a candidate?
So if the president pulls us out, he by himself
Got
can
it.
Probably have more influence than any one individual right now in affecting what happens. So the world is still going to move forward. And whether the world moves forward with the U.S. at the front or the back or in the middle is a very interesting question. I would go back to those studies I noted earlier that the early adopters can capture the markets.
Here's a good question from Shakia that kind of follows on what you've just said. She's listening in Tennessee. She says, we always talk about what the government and our leaders can do about climate change. What more can we as citizens do about climate change? What's your recommendation on that, Richard?
So my recommendation is you do what you want to. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm a scientist. But if you care about it, you do the big thing. You vote. You talk to people. There is scholarship that shows that the vast majority of Americans believe there are good solutions to this. Even if they don't believe it's a big problem, they believe there's a good solution, and they are not talking about it. So when you look at the maps of who thinks we can solve this, it's almost everyone. And if you look at the map of have you talked to your neighbor about it, it's almost no one.
Really?
And
Wow. Oh,
it's fascinating. The Yale Climate Communications people put together a survey, and they're just fascinating maps.
Wow.
So you do the big picture thing. And then if you want something else, pick something. And it might be bicycling, and it might be solar cells, and it might be recycling, and it might be – but you can't do everything. But because there really are benefits in dealing with the problems wisely, if everyone who cares picks something, you would see big changes happening across the country and the world.
Jen is asking, is there a written document to read? The answer is yes to that, right?
There are lots of, so the Paris Treaty is out there, the
large
basis for it. The National Academy of Sciences and the Royal Society have some fantastic resources online that is sort of the best science made. It's not glibly accessible, but it's accessible. And so, yes, there's really good information out there for you.
And Richard, at this hour, Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, is saying that she's quite pleased that China is going to remain in the climate treaty no matter what the United States does. That's a significant situation, isn't it? That China will continue to do this and so will the EU.
I believe so. I think that most of the people of the world are moving forward on this. We know we are burning fossil fuels about a million times faster than nature saved them for us. In the long term, we have to make a change just because eventually, and maybe in our students' lifetimes, they will become scarce. And because we know that the biggest picture is an efficient transition helps the economy as well as the environment, as well as national security, as well as employment, as well as ethics. People are looking for how do we make that efficient transition.
Richard, I'm always grateful for your time and your explanations and your science. Thanks so much. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you, Carrie, and thanks to your listeners.
Richard Alley is a geologist, and he's a climate scientist at Penn State University.
Looking for a new podcast? I'm Tracy Mumford, a producer for NPR News. I'm part of the team working on 74 Seconds. It's a new podcast that looks at the shooting death of Philando Castile by Officer Geronimo Yanez. It happened last summer in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. Yanez is now facing charges in Castile's death. 74 Seconds looks at what happened that night and what happens now when a police officer goes on trial. Reporters John Collins and Reham Fashir will walk you through this case as it unfolds. It's a story about race, policing, and justice in America. Subscribe to 74 Seconds wherever you get your podcasts.